Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans, and welcome to episode number 46 of the Peristyle Podcast. If you don't know already, the Peristyle Podcast is our weekly internet radio show talking all things USC. This week on the podcast, of course, being New Year's Eve, we're talking about the Rose Bowl. The Trojans play on Thursday, New Year's Day, first day of 2009. Big matchup versus Penn State. So it's going to be a great matchup. We're going to talk all about that in this episode of the podcast. If you have any questions or comments for us on the podcast, always just drop us an email, podcast@uscfootball.com. That's podcast@uscfootball.com. You can always go to uscfootball.com and post in the message boards. We'll try to answer any questions you have there. And of course, in the first segment, we love to talk to the coach. He is the de facto mayor of the city of Pasadena. The Rose Bowl is all about him. Coach Harvey Hyde, how are you doing today, sir?
Well, it's all about me, unless it's the Rose Bowl game. When it's the Rose Bowl game, it's the granddaddy of all of them, you know, and it can't be all about me because this is the 95th game. Can you believe that? The 95th Rose Bowl game, it all started in 1923, and believe me, that's when the name Rose Bowl was attached to it. And guess what two teams were playing in the first Rose Bowl game?
Oh, I should
know. USC, Penn State.
Wow, very first one.
Very first one, and USC beat Penn State 14-3. And, you know, this is going to be a great one, too, because it is the true Big Ten champion. That's Penn State. Remember, the last 2 years now, the Big Ten champion has gone to the national championship game. So this is the true Big Ten champion against the true Pac-10 champion, USC, at 11-1. So 22-2 between the two of them. And the payout is $18 million to each conference. Game time is at 2:10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Be early, tailgate, enjoy the experience, and don't get all stressed out worrying about the traffic, so leave early. So what do you think of that?
I think that's all good stuff, good information. And, Coach, if anyone else needs a ticket, it's not too late. Give Southern California Tickets a call. They're nice enough to be our sponsor for the first segment of the Peristyle Podcast, sctickets.com, 1-800-888-7287. If you're going to the game or you want to go to a concert or something, maybe one of those nice theater things, you know, if you're cultured and stuff like that, Coach, which I don't think we are. But if you need stuff like that, just give Southern California Tickets a call. You don't need any tickets, right, Coach?
No, I don't, but I was down there this morning, and for everyone, there are tickets available, depending when you're listening to this broadcast. We do this on Wednesday, so I don't believe they'll be open game day because the parade goes right in front of their building on New Year's. So get on over there if you're listening today. They do have tickets available. And also, remember, when the Rose Bowl game is done, they have tickets available to everything else. You know, you might want to go to the Super Bowl. You might want to go to a national championship game. You know, you can get all those type of tickets through Southern California Ticket Service. It's a great spot.
Definitely. Coach, this is a big matchup. I really like the point. You haven't heard that a lot, that this is the true champion of both conferences, Penn State. I guess the question that people ask me a lot, and I'll pose it on to you. Pete Carroll's never lost to a Big Ten school. I think it was 10 in a row or something like that by an average of, you know, three or four touchdowns. What makes Penn State different? Why are they not the typical Big Ten team that Pete Carroll kind of eats for lunch, if you could say that?
Well, you don't know if he will or he won't, but it's a different type of team because when you look at the team, it's not a bunch of teams of glorified recruits. The biggest recruit that came out of there the year that that most of these players are playing for Penn State was Brian Cushing, who's playing for USC. And that's what's so unique about this Penn State team. Obviously, they had a lot of all-leaguers. They had a lot of Big Ten player, of quarterback. Darryl Scott was the Big Ten quarterback player. You've got offensive linemen. You've got a receiver, Williams. It's a great player. But when you look at them now, you know, they were not all five-star players. I mean, when Darryl Clark was recruited, Chad Henne had just turned down Penn State, and Joe Paterno was watching a film on a tight end, and liked the tight end, put the film away, and when Chad Henne did not go to Penn State, went to Michigan. He said, I remember that quarterback that when we were watching that tight end, get that tape back out. And they got it out. He didn't have a lot of big-time scholarships and so on, and gave him a scholarship. And, you know, when you look at some of the players, they've been there. You've got 11 starters in the game that have played 4 years at Penn State. You've got five starters that are five-year players. So these guys have been around each other a long time. And what they do well because they've been taught by great coaches, Galen Hall, the offensive coordinator, former head coach at Florida University and others. I mean, there hadn't been a lot of changes in the staff at Florida State, or at Penn State. So, you know, the guys know what they're doing. They're very well coached. They have very few penalties. They make very few mistakes. They don't do a lot of fancy things. What they do, they don't try to trick you. They try to hit you. And they will be well coached. So it's going against a well-coached team of a bunch of guys that have been together for a long time and have a lot to prove against a very skilled, highly recruited, highly publicized team from USC. You know, USC started the season as the number one team in the country. Penn State started the season. I'm not sure where they were ranked. I mean, they beat Coastal somebody their first game of the year, and Temple, and, you know, they really came alive after they beat Oregon State. Then everybody took them somewhat more serious. And as they went along and beat Ohio State at Ohio State and so on, 13-9, then they said, hey, this team could go to Pasadena. And when they really need to beat Michigan State to make it happen, 49-18, they beat Michigan State, and now they're in Pasadena.
Yeah, no, to be fair, Coach, Derek Williams was a five-star guy. One of the, I think it was
Derek Williams was five-star. Yeah. Now, well, I deny all five-star.
No. But, and that was someone USC was actually after, so that was interesting.
Number two, right?
Yeah, we're gonna talk to.
Well, okay.
No, yeah, that's okay.
Give him a five-star.
We're gonna talk to one of the Penn State rivals guys later on in the show, and we're also gonna talk to Dan Wojcicki. So we're gonna get some more Penn State and stuff info there. And Coach, I want to bring this up. You know, you coached before. If someone was playing your team, and the terms that came up the most were this team is well coached. Obviously, that's a compliment to you. Discipline, stuff like that. We hear that a lot when we're talking about Penn State. Is that kind of like saying when someone asks you if you're, this girl that you want to set them up with is pretty, they say she's nice, which usually mean, you know, not so much. Does that mean they're not as talented as people would say if the only thing that people keep talking about them is that they're well-coached and well-disciplined?
No, they're more, what it means to me, they're more old school, okay? You know, when you go to an event, they're in coat and tie. When you go to the Beef Bowl, they're in coat and tie. They're yes sir, no sir, the complete time. You know, they wear their uniform the way it's supposed to be worn. They ride the bus the way you're supposed to ride a bus. They're more under the glove of Joe Paterno. You see other teams, and there's no one way of doing it, more loosely put together, more fun, more laughing, not dressed up as well, or casually dressed, let's use that term. So, you know, there's a lot that goes along with that. And, you know, he's thrown a lot of players off the team that got in trouble and so on this year, a couple of starters. So he doesn't put up with any type of nonsense. He comes up the old school way. They look at him as a father image, like a grandfather image, a guy that half of these players weren't even born when he was coaching it. Still coach here, when he was the head coach at Penn State. So there's a lot of legendary stories about him and so on. So, you know, they play hard for him, and he gets every bit of what he can out of each player. Now, when he brought the last team out here to California, and they played Oregon in the Rose Bowl, and that was a real talented team. Kerry Collins, Kajana Carter. I mean, they went undefeated that year. A lot of people thought they were the number one team in the country. But so, you know, he's had great players, don't get me wrong. But he's always the Woody Hayes, the Bear Bryant, the Bo Schembechler. I mean, they're different type of guys, okay? I mean, you know, you do it my way or it's the highway type. I hate to say it that way. And in some programs, it isn't just that same way, okay?
No, that makes sense. And I think you look, you know, there's two legendary coaches. Obviously, Paterno's been around you know, longer almost than Pete Carroll's been alive. But it, you know, if you think that Joe Paterno is this old guy, that he's 82 and he just kind of hobbles around and doesn't say anything. I mean, he's funny. Like we were at the media day yesterday. He tries to keep, you know, he can't throw the football around the practice field like Pete Carroll does, but he keeps you entertained. I mean, when he's talking to the media, he was pretty funny and he was bringing it. So I think he's got, you know, he might be an older guy, but he's got some youthful exuberance, I guess you could say. And it probably keeps him closer to the players than you would think an 82-year-old would be able to.
And I agree with you. I don't think he, I think a pat on the butt or a hug by him to some of the players really is a big thing to them. And, you know, he might not be able to name or remember every single player on the team, but I wouldn't bet against it. I wouldn't bet against it. But he has been able to put together a great staff and be able to give the assignments and responsibilities to the people to get them game planning and so on. And he handles all the public relations and all that part of the program. And, of course, he's the closer in recruiting. I mean, he doesn't go to every home for recruiting. There are certain homes that they need to bring him in to get it done. And when he walks in the home and talks to these parents and he says to them, I'll treat this kid as my own son and academics are important. I'm not sure, but someone told me every one of these senior players that are playing for him are going to graduate. Now, I don't know if that's a true fact or not. But and I'm not saying other schools don't do this. Every coach wants their student athletes to graduate. But, you know, I think they believe him more because he's not going to be there a year, sign my kid to a scholarship, and then the next year you read about him taking another job. Or his name doesn't come up every year about, well, Penn State's coach Joe Paterno is up for the New England job, or he's up for Oklahoma job. Or, you know, that sometimes hurts your program when young student athletes feel that there's a chance my coach that recruits me isn't going to be there. But he's going to be there, I guarantee you.
No, I agree with you, Coach. And you mentioned Darryl Clark before. Interesting kid. I was down there watching some of the interviews he was doing at the Rose Bowl media day. And, you know, he's an elusive kid. I mean, it's interesting. I didn't know that recruiting story that you told about him. That's really cool stuff. But when you look at him, I don't think he's like the fastest guy in the world. They don't do zone reads and stuff exclusively. I mean, they mostly run a kind of a traditional offense. They use a fullback a lot, but they will come in and he can come in the shotgun and do some of that, you know, option read kind of stuff. But what impressed me about him when I'd watch a couple of the games over again, you know, he could make people miss, but he was really powerful too. I mean, he could hit someone, and you got your linebackers have to be disciplined because you can't just try to arm tackle this kid because he will drag people with him going for the first down.
Well, you know, I haven't seen him in person as you have out of a uniform. But they say, what do they say he weighs, 230 or something?
Yeah, he's supposed to be, he's a big kid. I mean, he looked big. Yeah. He had glasses on, so I think that he was trying to just kind of not be a little bit under the radar there. But, yeah, no, he's a big-looking kid.
Yeah, he's a big kid. So, you know, he's a main threat for them in their offense. And I really feel that he's going to be a part of their offensive game plan. I mean, 100% as a running back and as well as a passer. And I think they're going to try to utilize their top player, which is Williams. As you told me, he's a five-star, which I forgot, and you're exactly right. They're going to utilize Williams, Butler, and Clark. That's their offense. And they got hard-nosed offensive linemen who will bite you to hold on to you, you know. The referee, the umpire's got to catch them. They'll do whatever it takes to block for these guys. And they're going to spread the field on USC. If I was Penn State, I'd spread the field. Spread out USC's defense. I don't want to run into the strength of them. Have no remaining backs at all, hardly at all, or have one remaining back, put him in motion, or keep him there and run the option. Wouldn't try to run right at him. And I would run Clark. I'd run him out of an open set. I'd run draws with him. I'd run all kinds of things with him. I'd try to throw three-step drops real quick, let the ball go. All those type of things to try to equalize the power of USC's defense.
Now, I watched them, Coach. I rewatched the Ohio State game, and that's the best defense statistically that they played. They've scored 40 points, I think, 8 times this year, but only once was it against a top, like, 50 type of a defense. That was the Oregon State game. You know, and you got to give them credit for the Oregon State win, even though that was before Oregon State kind of figured out what they did well, and they replaced their entire front seven and all of that. But when I watched that Ohio State game, I mean, Clark at quarterback, they couldn't really move the ball. They had scored 3 points up until, you know, some point in the second half, and Clark had to be pulled out of the game, and the backup, I'm blanking on his name right now, but he...
Tavin?
Devlin.
The kid that left?
Devlin. And
Devlin, yeah.
He ended up transferring, so he's not even there. They scored, you know, you said they scored 13 points in that game. 10 of them were scored with a backup quarterback in there. It just seems to me, and Ted Venegas wrote about this a little bit too, in our we had a Penn State preview. It's up on USCfootball.com right now. This offense struggled against the better defenses. And, you know, obviously USC would have to be in that category. I don't know if you want to comment on that at all.
Well, I can't comment on it too much because I haven't seen them play a lot of games this year. It's amazing that they haven't been on television a lot out here in the West. Seen highlights and so on, so I really haven't seen a complete game to know exactly, you know, what to expect. But from just gathering information and talking to people and so on and coaches, that's why I say against USC's defense, which some people are saying are the best defense ever, and I don't know, and some people complain when people make that statement. It could be, and the only way you can equalize that is to have big plays, which SC hasn't given up big plays, but you got to keep going for big plays. You got to be able to keep your defense off the field. You got to maintain ball control. So how do you do that? Short passing game and running game that works because you're spreading the field. With man-on-man, you're not going to be able to block all those linebackers. Like one of their offensive linemen or their centers made a statement. He says, when we normally play someone, we play someone that has a great linebacker. But when you look at SC on film, they have three linebackers that can run and get the hole. And if you don't take the proper angle to block them, you miss them. So it's a whole new routine in learning, like, your blocking schemes and so on, and how to take the proper angles. And also adjusting to these blitzes that Pete Carroll brings for each game against what you do. So it's going to be a very interesting game. It's going to be a very hard game for me to predict the outcome of when I do it on the pregame show. But by that time, I'm going to be forced to do that because they're going to ask me.
Now, well, Coach, if you look at this game and some of the other teams that USC's played, I mean, everyone talked about, even when USC played Ohio State this year, when Ohio State goes out of their conference and plays one of the, you know, speed teams, so to say, they've struggled, you know. But Penn State seemed to be able to do pretty well. I mean, they've won bowl games against the Florida State team. Obviously, Florida State's not, you know, up to the par of where they were before. But they've played some of the speed type of teams from other conferences that are good, that have athletes that are similar to what Penn State has. And they've actually had a pretty good track record winning these bowl games and stuff. I think maybe that's the reason that a lot of people are saying that this isn't the typical Big Ten team that USC is going to be facing again.
Do you remember that team that played in the Fiesta Bowl? You might not have even been born. They played Miami of Florida. Miami of Florida. And they were the number one team in the country. They were going to win the national championship, and Penn State played them and beat them there. I don't know if you remember that or not. That was one of the biggest upsets that year in college football. They have a way of playing great games. I mean, look at the games they had this year and the way they approached them, and they had to win them, and they did. The Iowa game was their only setback, and bad weather and so on. It's amazing. Both teams, Ohio State, after the Ohio State, Iowa beats Penn State. After the Ohio State win, Oregon State beats USC. So both teams beat Ohio State, and the next week, both teams get beaten. Did you know that?
That's a very good point, Coach. I didn't even hear that one yet.
Yeah. So, well, you hear a lot of new things here. You know, I just make these things up, you know what I mean, as I go along. But if you look it up, it's true fact. So that's the letdown you have after beating Ohio State. You get up for this game, and then you have a letdown, and you come to play. And not that Iowa didn't have a big win, because I was sitting there watching the game and cheering for Iowa. But also for SC, when they went up to Oregon State after beating Ohio State, they got beat too. So it's a letdown feeling after you play a big team like USC or Ohio State or Penn State or whatever.
Ah, no, I like that, Coach. I'm going to have to, I'll use that one. I'm going to do
I won't allow you to use that. I have a patent on it.
I have to do, Coach, maybe you can give me some advice. I'm going to do my first live TV segment today on NFL Network. I do that College Football Now show, but I'm always taped. I tape it in the morning, so if I screw up, I mean, they don't usually let you redo anything, but you at least know if you screw up really badly, they can just do it again. But they're going to have me on live. I'm going to be debating one of the Penn State writers, so it'll be interesting. We're going to have to go back and forth a little bit. It should be fun.
It should be real fun. And remember, before you use anything I used, make sure you look it up.
Okay. Coach Hines.
But you proved me wrong. You proved me wrong on Williams because you're exactly right. And I'll tell you what, that really gets to me.
No, Coach. You're the best at what you do. And just one quick thing at the end, Coach, before we got to go. I did a radio show yesterday. I think it was in Alabama, and they were asking about the pageantry and stuff. And I just thought of you. I mean, it just seems like, to me, this is definitely the most important day in for the city of Pasadena. I mean, it seems like the entire calendar of what goes on up there, all the businesses, everything, kind of revolves around this day.
You know, you're right, you know, and we're almost at the end of it, and I'm totally wiped out, okay? I've been at everything. In fact, today I'm going to the kickoff luncheon in a few minutes, and I'm the pre-kickoff host. So I have to get over there and do three or four segments for the kickoff luncheon, and tomorrow I've got the pregame show still to do. Yesterday I was on 4 hours of radio, 3 hours at ESPN, and then another hour of my regular show I do back to Las Vegas. And then, of course, after that, they're having the parties at the TET, the float builders companies, the parties at the Tournament of Roses, and the president's parties, and the director's dinners, and this and that. So I'm sort of wiped out, you know. It's that time of year, and also everyone's got this cough and this cold that's going around. So you're trying to fight that, and I'm fighting that off, too. So I went to the Beef Bowl. I don't know if you've ever been to the Beef Bowl, but it was pleasant going there and talking to the coaches and watching the kids have a good time. And the Queen of Court, I don't know if you know this, but let me sort of give away my age. Are you ready? I'm
going to
do it on the air. But I'm sitting there with one of the princesses, and her father comes over to me and gives me a big hug. And I said, wow, this is something special. And he says, you don't remember me, do you? And I said, honestly, no. He says, you recruited me. You recruited me out of high school. You recruited me out of high school, Michael Jenkins. He says, my daughter here is a Rose Princess. And I said, oh, my gosh, can you believe that? So
wow.
It's absolutely amazing. You never know who you're going to run into or who you're going to see and how proud you are of these kids and so on how they've gone on. And you're able to tell these type of stories. Just like Dwayne Walker now getting a head coaching job at New Mexico State. He played for me at Pasadena City College. I've been very close to him. Tim Brewster, the head coach of Minnesota, played for me at Pasadena City College. To see these kids go on, Pat Hill was on my staff at UNLV. To see these people go on, and Ryan, to be able to work with you, and I'll watch you go on someday, you know, it's great to see it. And that's part of what we're in, the business of helping young people use their God-given skills to advance their lives. And it's more than a scholarship or an education. It's common sense you gain and the people you meet and and you never get a second chance at a first impression. And it's just a great thing to be during this period of the year with the holidays and the gifts and the parties to see your friends and then go to the big game. And it's just great to do all that. And I'm very fortunate this year. I'm going down to the Orange Bowl, too. So I've got to work that out with you on how we're going to do that segment. I'm glad I thought of that because next Wednesday I'll be in Florida.
Oh, wow.
So if you want to call me down there, I'll get a number for you and we can do it down there.
That might be fun, yeah. Reporting live.
Yeah, or whatever.
Yeah, cool.
Well, you let me know, but let's talk about it after the segment, okay?
All right, Coach. Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. It's been a great year. Our first year of the podcast is obviously coming to a close, and it's been my honor to have you on, and hopefully everyone out there enjoys your insights, and we will definitely look forward to talking to you more next year. We'll talk about the Rose Bowl in our next segment.
All right, buddy, and let's again thank our sponsor, Southern California Ticket Service. Give them a call. Their local number is 626-577-2557, and you've got the toll-free number.
Yeah, and sctickets.com is right online, so it's all good. So anyway, Coach, thank you very much, and we will talk to you again
next week. Happy New Year, buddy.
Happy New Year to you. Enjoy the Rose Bowl. Everyone else will be right back after this short break talking more about USC and Penn State.
Peristyle Podcast. We'll be back after this short break. Tickets, tickets, tickets. SC Tickets is your concert, sports, and theater ticket source. We have the tickets you need to any event worldwide. Football tickets are now available. Call SC Tickets now at 1-800-888-7287, 1-800-888-7287. That's 1-800-888-7287. Or visit us on the web at sctickets.com. SC Tickets, concert, sports, and theater.
Hey, USC Trojan fans, to get into the huddle of your Southern Cal Trojans, log on to uscfootball.com today for all the latest in Trojan football, basketball, and recruiting news. Ryan Abraham will give you an in-depth analysis, recruiting updates, and will answer your questions every day on the message board. So for all the latest in team and recruiting news on your USC Trojans, check out uscfootball.com, the officially licensed Southern Cal site of the Rivals.com network.
We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
Welcome back to our second segment of the Peristyle Podcast, and we have a very special guest. In this segment, we have Nate Bauer. He's the web editor for Blue White Illustrated, part of the Rivals.com network. He was nice enough to come on the podcast today. He's in town in L.A. covering the Rose Bowl. Nate, thank you very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me, Ryan. I appreciate it.
Hey, anytime. I'll try to come on. Hopefully we can get you on. I'll be on Blue White Illustrated today, BWI today, and I can answer some questions for Penn State fans. But first up, you were actually downtown today for the – there was a kind of a mini press conference. Yesterday was a big media day. What did Joe Pa and Pete Carroll talk about today at the media conference?
I think probably the biggest news of the day, if you want to call it news, is that Joe will not be coaching from the sidelines tomorrow. He will be up in the press box. For whatever reason, that seems to fascinate the media, and it's really become sort of a dominant storyline. It really dominated the press conference today. Obviously, Pete, was very complimentary of Penn State, sort of, just your typical niceties being exchanged between the two coaches. But one funny moment was Coach Carroll sort of compared Paterno. He said he was a living Benjamin Button, who, obviously, if anybody who's seen the movie or seen some of the previews for the new Benjamin Button film, it's the guy who sort of ages backwards. And Paterno, when asked about it later in the press conference, had absolutely no idea what Carroll was referring to. It was sort of a funny moment. He said that in the past 40 years, Paterno said that he's seen two films, being Titanic and E.T. It sort of got a big roar out of the media guys. But that was pretty much it. I mean, I think basically for Paterno's end, a lot of the questions beyond him being on the sideline or up in the press box were geared toward Penn State being an underdog in the game. And Paterno was pretty open and upfront about saying that, he thought, yeah, of course Penn State's an underdog in this game. He thinks that his players think that they're underdogs, but at the same time, they sort of want to approach this game where, they might be in the back of their heads that they're underdogs, but at the same time, they don't want to go out there and approach this as though they're just trying to save face, get embarrassed. They want to play this game to win it, obviously. And he's hoping that his players have that same mentality.
Oh, that's interesting stuff. Two movies in 40 years. If you're going to pick two, I guess those are two pretty good ones. The sideline thing, I think some people were talking on the message boards in a little bit. A lot of people thought that maybe he would be down there on the sideline because it looked like he was getting around okay. And it would be kind of like a last minute, boost for the team. I don't know. Maybe it works out well. He's up in the press box. If you saw what Charlie Weiss did, they just destroyed Hawaii. So maybe that'll be the new rage. Coaches being in the press box.
Yeah, it's worked out for Paterno so far this year. I mean, he explained how it works. And for all of us who are on the Penn State beat, we've been through this song and dance pretty much all year. Where he has, obviously with technology, it's a lot different than 50 years ago when he was coaching. He has access to all of his coaches on the sidelines through the the headsets, and he can get a hold of anybody he wants. And in fact, I mean, I think he sort of understands that it might be a little bit of an advantage to be up there, if only because, you know, he can see the game better. He can really see what's happening out there on the field a lot better than he can on the sideline. You know, for anybody who's been on the sideline during a game, it's pretty much the worst vantage point you can have to watch the game. Of course, at the same time, he also, it bothers him that he can't be out there with his team. He's very much a figurehead during a game, in that, you know, he for years, I mean, he's always been the guy that, you know, pats a kid on the butt when he's coming off the field, or, you know, knocks him around a little bit, depending on whether a kid's, you know, high or low, based on a play. But yeah, I think he was pretty adamant that he would indeed be up in the box. The only real window he left open was that he might be able to lead his team out onto the field. He definitely looks, you know, miles better than he did earlier this season. I mean, he was really, really struggling to move around, to, you know, get up out of chairs, that kind of thing. So he at this point, he's walking without a cane. He looks 10 times better than he did at the beginning of the season, but he'll be up in the box tomorrow.
All right. We're with Nate Bauer, the web editor for BWI on the Rivals.com network. He covers Penn State football. Nice enough to join us on the podcast today. He's in Los Angeles, down there downtown. Just had a couple questions I asked people on our message board, maybe to email a couple questions. I only did this about an hour ago, so we didn't have too much time to get some, but I got a few that came in. A poster, Roven, wanted to know what the perceived weakness of USC is, the perceived biggest weakness, and how do you think Penn State will be able to exploit that?
Wow.
Big one. Bam.
Yeah, I really don't think, as far as perceptions and respect and that kind of thing is concerned, I mean, Penn State fans and I mean, obviously the team and the coaches, pretty much everyone is in agreement that USC is just a phenomenal football team. Defensively, obviously the stats speak for themselves. The players speak for themselves. I mean, just the names and the accomplishments that those guys have had. It's just been a tremendous season for USC. Outside of that hiccup against Oregon State, weaknesses. I honestly can't give you a straight answer by saying that anybody really perceives USC to have any real big weaknesses. Quarterback, offensively, the running backs, the offensive line, the wideouts. I mean, it's all there, top to bottom. So I think Penn State fans and the team are expecting, probably legitimately the biggest test and the best team that they have faced in, maybe years at least. Certainly this year and certainly the past few years.
Yeah, I think a lot of SC fans are expecting the best team that anyone has played on their schedule this year, that USC's played on their schedule, facing Penn State. Harvey Hyde, I have on, he used to coach at UNLV and other places, and he's always on the podcast with me in the first segment. He brought something up too. The Iowa loss, that was the week after Ohio State. Am I correct in that?
There was actually a bye week in between the two games.
Okay.
But yes, it was the next game after
Okay.
Ohio State.
It was actually very similar then to what USC did. USC played, had a kind of a bye week, a week and a half, because it was a Thursday game. They played Ohio State. You know, it was a big win, emotional win, and then they had the letdown against Oregon State. So I thought that was an interesting point I hadn't heard brought up before, those kind of letdown games. But I had another question.
Go ahead.
Oh, just another question from Rick Manning.
I was just going to explain. I mean, I think the Iowa game, it was a letdown, and just for a variety of reasons. I like that point. It seemed like everything that could have gone wrong towards the end of that game for Penn State, did. And I think it was sort of, USC sort of found themselves in the same situation, where just, turnovers, just things didn't just things just didn't go right. And it wasn't the team, that everyone had seen for the previous nine games up until that point. And, you know, obviously for USC, the team that everybody saw after that loss to Oregon State. So, yeah, I mean, I think the similarities are definitely there.
All right. And next question came from Rick Manning. He sent the email on this. He wanted to know kind of what the keys would be, I mean, to stopping the USC offense. You know, the Penn State defense has, you know, had a tremendous, tremendous year. And if you wanted to point to some kind of weaknesses on USC, they haven't scored as many points that a lot of people have expected with some of the talent that they have on offense. What do you think that the Penn State defense is going to have to do, if they have to do anything differently? I know they're, you know, they kind of run a 4-3, and they usually play pretty straight up, not a lot of blitzing and stuff. Do you think they'll have to do anything different or just execute better to stop this USC offense?
Yeah, I mean, I think Penn State's key on defense has really been, you know, just playing sound sort of fundamental defense. They've been, I wouldn't call them extremely opportunistic, but they do, you know, sack the quarterback a lot. They got a kid in Aaron Maven who was just really phenomenal at getting to the quarterback. 12 sacks this year. So they've been able to put pressure on quarterbacks. They've been able to force some turnovers with interceptions and fumbles and that sort of thing. I think a lot of this game is going to come down to the running game straight up. If some team can sort of establish the run and then open up the pass and really create a balanced offense, that team will be the most successful. Penn State's really going to have their hands full with those three tailbacks, and I think a lot of that is going to come down to basically the linebackers at Penn State, who to this point in the season have played fairly well, but it's been sort of a storyline all season. But Penn State lost basically an All-American in Sean Lee, and before the season even began, he was lost to an ACL injury in spring practice last year, and he hasn't played a down this year. To fill in for him, Penn State has been using a kid named Josh Hall, who you got to give the kid credit. I mean, he's a walk-on. Or a formal walk-on. He finally got a scholarship this year. But, to that end, I mean, this is a walk-on's a walk-on, and he's been extremely serviceable this year. But at the same time, against the caliber athlete that USC brings to the table, he's really going to have his hands full.
Yeah, I do like the fact that both offenses are balanced. You know, there's a lot, you look at the Penn State offense, Clark's so efficient, throwing the football, really high efficiency rate. He's able to take off and run sometimes. They run the ball really well. And I think the same thing with USC, and not as mobile of a quarterback, but they do have that balance on offense. I think that's what makes – it'll be an interesting challenge, both sides, because you have two great defenses, but these aren't offenses that are one-dimensional. They're going to have to play everything. They're going to have to play run. They're going to have to play pass. So I think that's what's going to make this interesting, just watching how those defenses match up against balanced offenses.
Right, right. Across the board, the numbers are pretty similar for both of these teams as far as, rushing leaders, total rushing yards, total passing yards, total receiving yards. They are very similar teams, and both on both ends, the success this year has been from the offenses being balanced, and in turn keeping defenses off balance. I definitely think whichever team can sort of maintain its identity, will obviously have the most success.
There's one other question that came in. I don't know if you cover recruiting at all. Do you follow that too much?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
That's
our job,
as much as I can.
Yeah.
We have another guy who is much better at it, but I sort of dabble in it.
Well, there was a couple of high profile battles. I mean, Brian Cushing talked about getting in home visit from Joe Pa. He's from New Jersey, came out here. Derek Williams, superstar. He's got all those like 4,000 all-purpose yards for Penn State. USC was big into him, and he ended up coming to Penn State and really helping out that program. There's a couple guys that Penn State was also after. Vidal Hazelton, wide receiver, mm-hmm. and Broderick Green, who's out of running back out of Arkansas. Both of those guys came to USC. They came across the country, and they transferred out this year. They're not there anymore. And so the question they wanted to ask if you could comment on kind of that recruiting and what do you think about that when a guy comes all the way across country and then it doesn't work out for him?
Yeah, you know, I think for a lot of recruiting fans, you know, Penn State people, you know, I really don't think that there would be many Penn State fans who would even try to put Penn State in the same, you know, sort of echelon that USC is in. I mean, USC is just a powerhouse program. They bring in top-notch kids every year. You know, so when a Penn State fan sees a kid like Hazleton choose USC or even Broderick Green, when Penn State very much has, you know, these open spots, you know, when Green committed, there, you know, Royster had not made a splash yet. And you know, pretty much everyone's wondering, listen, Broderick, you can come right in and basically be a four-year starter or a three-year starter. You know, why on earth would you go to USC where, you know, you're going to have to sort of battle and you know, your odds are limited at best when you've got two of the other top five running backs in the country committing in the same class. A lot of times it just doesn't really make sense from the outside for some of these recruiting fans. You know, but at the same time, you understand what these kids are attracted to. You know, this is my first time in L.A., but, you know, obviously it's gorgeous out here. The weather's great. USC, you know, the football program is just, it's really in a class of its own, you know, across college football. And I mean that. And I think a lot of other, I think a lot of other Penn State fans would agree with that sentiment that USC has just been sort of the standard that a lot of other programs are compared to across this country. And Penn State is, you know, Penn State fans and Penn State itself, the program, you know, USC is what you strive to be like, you know, ultimately, as far as the success on the field is concerned. So, and especially success in recruiting as well. So, you know, I think the interesting thing with those two cases with Broderick and Vidal has been, you know, Penn State fans are still almost clamoring, you know, for those guys to make their transfers to Penn State. Obviously, they're not happening. But at the same time, the sort of open wound is still there, I think, in both of those cases. Cushing, on the other hand, not so much. I mean, obviously, everybody understands how spectacular a football player he is. But I think the Green and the Hazleton incidents are so recent, and Penn State really thought that they were in it until the very end with both of those guys. So the way that those worked out, you know, everybody's still sort of scratching their heads.
Yeah, cool. That's interesting insight. Thank you very much for doing that. And you did pick a perfect day. Yesterday was absolutely gorgeous. So I'm glad you arrived yesterday, I believe, and you couldn't have picked a better day to come to L.A. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was. This is spectacular. Yesterday in State College, Pennsylvania, where Penn State is, you know, it was, I think, about 25 degrees. The wind was swirling and howling. It was completely miserable. I hop on a plane. I go 6 hours, and all of a sudden, I'm in basically the nicest place on earth. So it's working out pretty well.
Sweet. All right. Well, he is Nate Bauer. He is the web editor for BWI, BlueWhiteIllustrated.com, part of the Rivals.com network covering Penn State. Thank you so much for joining us today, and enjoy the game on Thursday.
Hey, thanks a lot. I'll see you there.
All right, everyone else, stay tuned. We'll have a quick break, and we're going to come back with Dan Wyke, the USCFootball.com beat writer.
You are listening to the Peristyle Podcast from Los Angeles, California.
Hey, USC Trojan fans, to get into the huddle of your Southern Cal Trojans, log on to USCFootball.com today for all the latest in Trojan football, basketball, and recruiting news. Ryan Abraham will give you an in-depth analysis, recruiting updates, and will answer your questions every day on the message board. So for all the latest in team and recruiting news on your USC Trojans, check out USCFootball.com, the officially licensed Southern Cal site of the Rivals.com network.
It's time to get back to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com.
Welcome back to the Peristyle Podcast, our third and final segment of the last podcast of the year. And we have Dan Wyke of USCFootball.com. Dan, what's up, buddy?
I'm just excited about 2009 and everything that's going to happen on New Year's Day right now.
All right. Well, speaking of New Year's Day, obviously the Rose Bowl coming up. Maybe the biggest story now coming out of the USC camp is the academic ineligibility of fullback Stanley Havili. What did Pete Carroll say about it, and what do you think is going on there?
I think they tried to clear it up a little bit at a morning press conference today where Carroll said that there's a new way where credits are kind of where they find out who's done what with grades, a new distribution system or something like that. And they found out that Havili did not have enough units to play in this game. So that's why, that he'll be out on Thursday, but he should be back for spring ball right now. That's kind of the thought process that, he's just ineligible essentially till the start of next semester at this point.
Now, him being a big part of this USC offense, what is that going to do? What's going to do the USC offense?
Well, they look at Havili, obviously, as like one, such a versatile offensive guy. I mean, he can block, he can catch passes, he can run the ball if they wanted to. They could do all these different things with him. Instead of trying to find somebody who could do all those things, what Steve Sarkisian and Pete Carroll decided to do was they're going to just use three different people to do those things. They're going to use Adam Goodman, they're going to use DJ Shumate, and they're going to use Red Ellison. And Sark hinted that there might be some other mystery kind of fullback candidates, but I wouldn't even know where to begin guessing on who they could run back there. But I think you look at Shumate as a receiver. Red Ellison can block. Adam Goodman can do everything. He's been, in the program and understands the role, I guess, probably better than either of those other two guys who are both converts to the position. So I think that's probably what they're going to do. The other thing they're going to do is because they weren't preparing necessarily to play with Havili in the first place because he'd been injured. So I don't really think that was probably a big part of their game plan. It wasn't like, they saw something on film where, oh, wow, Penn State can't stop Havili, he can't stop our fullbacks, so we're going to load up on fullback plays. Because of Havili's injuries, they weren't even 100% sure he'd be even able to go, period, whether he's eligible or not. So I think they kind of probably scaled back a little bit on the responsibility of the fullback in this game plan.
Now, I think a lot of people complain about this USC offense. A lot of the USC fans, they don't really like when people come in, substitutions are made, and they're like, oh, look, this guy's coming in, that means it's a run, or this come, So to do something like that, I don't think that's going to make a lot of the USC fans happy if they see, DJ Shumate come in, oh, here comes the swing pass, or they, whatever, stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's a run because Ellison's in.
Yeah, the good thing about that is that all do have hints of versatility. I mean, Shumate has been working at fullback for a long time this season, and it's really impressive coaches. I mean, they really, I think he's a guy who'll probably stay at that position, and he'll be a guy who they'll probably use. He can block some, he's got a running back pedigree and a wide receiver pedigree, so he's like, he can be the run or catch. He's just probably not 100% ready, I don't think, for, a Havili kind of proportioned game plan where, you're doing all these different things. And then you look at Red Ellison, who's a tight end who can block and he can catch some passes too, and stuff like that. I just think that what they did is play into those guys' strengths and probably want to put them in positions to succeed. You make a good point. I just hope that they don't do it that kind of way where they're like, okay, DJ Schumann's in, we're passing to him, or we're throwing the ball for sure,
Right.
But like I said, I really, I don't know. I have a hard time believing that any of those three guys are going to play a ton anyway.
Yeah, they can mix it up, and obviously they don't having Havili in there is a big weapon, but it's going to be hard to replace him. We'll have to see what they do.
He's really one of he's one of 10 guys on offense. I mean, I personally, I think it would have been a bigger loss had Damien Williams not come back. And that would have forced them down further on their wide receiver chart. I think that having Damien Williams is play. Versus a guy like Havili, I think is more important.
Yeah, but you have this known affinity for all the USC receivers for some reason. So
we were talking about this yesterday. Yeah, I don't know what it is. It's something where I've always kind of liked receivers. I don't know. They're like selfish, but they're fun selfish. A little goofy usually. I don't know. Good times.
Yeah, good times. All right. Well, now we know it's well documented that you've been trying to switch the USC offense from the traditional form to the kind of spread. It hasn't worked out, so I'm sure you'll keep badgering Pete Carroll during his press conferences to switch to the spread.
I've changed actually on this. I want them now to run the wishbone. I've come around on this, or the spread bone.
Spread bone.
As you so eloquently put it a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
Anyway, get to your question.
So Penn State runs what they call spread HD. But if you look at it, they don't really do all that much spread. I don't know if you talked to Joe Paterno yesterday or if you're trying to get him to – I know he's an old guy, but you try to switch his ways a little bit, get him to run a little bit more spread. Did that work out when you're trying to talk to him about it?
I sat down with him and I pitched the ideas for the spread coast offense, and he looked at me like I was stupid.
Yeah.
So it didn't go well. I like what Penn State does offensively. I feel like that they have a really well-rounded offensive game plan. I mean, they do a lot of different things. I think I'm really curious to see how much they use Derek Williams at quarterback out of that kind of wildcat formation, because he's a guy who can throw the ball too. Kind of McFadden-ish in that way, where, you know, he's not just because he's back there doesn't 100% mean they're going to run, which I think is going to cause some problems for the USC defense. I mean, they're going to have to account for that, and they're not going to be able to. They're going to see him. I was talking to Taylor Mays about this yesterday, actually, for a story that I'm going to be writing later today. And, you know, Taylor said that just because Derek Williams is there, it's not like they can load up the box with like 9 guys. You know, that doesn't mean 8 guys in the box for sure. Because, you know, they have to respect the fact that he can throw. And, I mean, that's something that, I mean, Derek Williams, is, you know, he said to me yesterday that, he, you know, he's played quarterback all his life. When he was being recruited, I mean, he was a guy who was at the top. He was recruited as an athlete. Nobody really knew exactly what to do with him because he could do so much of everything, you know?
Definitely. And it's a guy that USC was after. And sometimes, I mean, it wasn't like USC shunned him, but if it was something like USC stopped recruiting him, obviously he might have a little bit more oomph in his step when he gets on the field against USC. But just the fact that Pete Carroll was there recruiting him, I mean, that might give him a little bit more motivation this game.
I mean, you always want to show people that, you know, that you proved them wrong. That's my motivation for doing each of these podcasts, really, is to prove you wrong for all the negative disparaging remarks that I hear over the course of the day from you.
Yes. If I just gave you like 1/10 of all the negative emails I get sent about you every day, I know you'd probably curl up in a ball and cry. So I try to protect you.
You'd have to put me on suicide watch or something like that.
Yeah.
I'd have to cut all my meals with plastic utensils. Yeah. It'd be terrible.
Now, we were down at the media day yesterday, and we got to talk to a lot of some, you know, national guys. I mean, guys that cover the Pac-10, like Ted Miller for ESPN, but we've talked, you know, like Stuart Mandel and a whole bunch of different national guys that are in town. What's the kind of perception there you've got from talking to some of these guys?
I mean, everybody likes USC. I mean, to win this game, I think there's still some curiosity as to how competitive Penn State can be in this game. I think that I personally think it'll be competitive. I like we've said for the last 3 weeks, I really like Penn State. I think they're a very good team. And that's one kind of the overwhelming feeling is that still, you know, it's this USC defense is just so good. And people, you know, I mean, and then you compound that with the fact that you've given Pete Carroll a month to get ready for this game, you know, give or take. And those are two really good factors. You know what I mean? Not only are they prepared, but they're talented. And so, I mean, you look at that and you look at, you know, Pete's track record in those situations. It's been, you know, astounding. They've always shown up to play in bowl games. They'll show up to play in this one. You know, I think that they've answered the biggest question for me, you know, and this apparently was a question that was asked of them a lot last year, was how motivated can they be for this game when they maybe feel like, you know, they dropped the ball and didn't live up to their potential or what everybody expected of them to be in the national title game. And, you know, are they bored with being at the Rose Bowl and stuff like that? And I don't get that sense at all. I think that, you know, I think they're excited about this game. I think they're excited about this challenge. And I think that they know that Penn State's a very capable football team, and I don't think they're taking them lightly at all. It's not like they're just, it's another ritual beating of a Big Ten team. I don't get that vibe from them at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard though. I've been asked this on radio interviews and I don't see it. I haven't seen it on the practice field. You haven't seen it from the comments that the guys made, but you know, we did the same kind of thing after the Ohio State game, saying, hey, is there going to be some kind of letdown against Oregon State? And, you know, to them, it didn't look like practices were any worse, or, you know, they seemed like they were motivated in practice. They said the right things, and obviously they didn't come out to play in that game.
Yeah, it was, you know, plus I think there's something to be said, too, about that game being on the road. I remember being there and having a really weird feeling right when USC got stopped the first time they went three and out. And I remember thinking that, you know, that momentum in that game, at least initially, was so heavily in favor of Oregon State. I mean, the crowd was behind them. I mean, it was they, you know, USC was uphill that whole game. You know, they really were. They were never in control of that game, you know, not from the minute they walked out on the field. And I have a hard time thinking that at the Rose Bowl it'll be like that. You know, I would imagine it's a pro-USC crowd. You would hope. I mean, it's in SC's backyard. There are going to be a lot of Penn State fans there, and I do think that SC needs to get out to a good start. But I think it's a little different in that sense. You know, plus, I mean, again, at that point in time, who thought Oregon State was any good? You know, nobody really knew that this was going to be a very good football team. You know, Pete Carroll and the players can talk all they want about how, you know, every game's the same and stuff like that. But, I mean, these players aren't stupid. I mean, they know what people are saying about other teams and stuff like that. And I think they know that people think Penn State's a good team. I mean, nobody. I haven't heard anybody really say that Penn State's not any good yet. I mean, has anybody brought that up, that this is just going to be another one of those beatdowns? I haven't really heard much.
I mean,
that.
It's come up sometimes, but the problem that I had, and I asked Coach Hyde about this, is a lot of times people say, "Oh, they're very well coached. They're very disciplined." And I mentioned to him, "Does that mean they don't have talent?"
I think they've got tons of talent.
But just when you say that, when that's the first thing someone says about you, and they're not saying that they're very talented, they're saying, well, they're well coached, they're disciplined, stuff like that. I mean, usually you come out with like, yeah, they got talent all over the place. No, I mean, that's not what you're saying about this Penn State team. I think that's where the kind of question is. And that and we got to wrap this up real quick, unfortunately, but the fact that they haven't done as well offensively when they've played good defenses. They really struggle. In the Ohio State game, they scored 10 of their 13 points with the backup quarterback who's no longer on the team. And that doesn't bode well for going against the USC defense.
I mean, would a blowout surprise me? No, it wouldn't. I mean, I've at this point, but I don't know what would surprise me. I think the only thing that would surprise me is if Penn State ran over USC and rolled them. I really think that that's the only outcome that is truly surprising in this game. I wouldn't be surprised if Penn State won a close game. I wouldn't be surprised if USC won a close game. And I wouldn't be surprised if USC absolutely destroyed them either. But, I think the one last thing that I want to say, too, is that this is a Penn State team that has made a kind of a really remarkable turnaround from where that program was at 4 years ago. I mean, when they were really struggling, people weren't sure if Paterno should keep his job, if he should step down. And this recruiting class, they're seniors right now, guys like Derek Williams, and you know, they're older guys. They're the guys who really kind of rejuvenated that program and really kind of gave it maybe a second or third wind. I don't know, how many wins do you get when you've been coaching for 70 years?
Like, I mean, they've really
kind of rejuvenated everything. And I think, you know, they take a lot of pride in that. I got that sense that's important to them, that they're the guys that helped kind of turn this around for that university football-wise, and it's going to be important for them to show up. And like I said, I think probably the most logical pick in this game is to say USC in a close game.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point to end on. Derek Williams was someone that USC wanted badly. People were kind of shocked that he actually went to Penn State. And, you know, him and the rest of that class helped turn this team around, and I think that gives them even more motivation than normal because, hey, this proves they can beat USC. That proves we went to the right school. We came here. We changed this, the perception of the program. Joe Pa's sticking around longer. We turned this team into a winner again.
Yeah, and it would honestly prove them and put them in the conversation as being a team that was one of the best in the country this year.
Excellent. All right, Dan, well, enjoy your first Rose Bowl game on Thursday, and we'll be back to talk to you next week. Get on the analysis on whatever happened in that Rose Bowl game.
Can't wait to talk about it.
Excellent. Everyone else, thank you very much for listening this week on the Peristyle Podcast. We will be back as advertised next week, talking all about breaking down what happened in the Rose Bowl. We'll see you then.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can now download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player. Just search for Peristyle Podcast the next time you log into iTunes.